Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
I'd rather not go into...
Okay, well, are you sure? Because, again, you know, we all know that for a joke to work, it's got to be able to stretch the truth a little, right? We're not going to take everything literally.
Well, there's one thing I'd like to stretch a little bit. My penis.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Decoding TV, a podcast about television. I'm David Chen, and I really didn't appreciate Patrick Klepek showing up at my house with a racist Asian man statue at the front door. Can someone please call the police? Joining me today is Patrick Klepek.
And I'm always secretly recording these podcasts so I can take notes about having to have better conversations with David the next time. So far, it's not working.
On today's episode of the podcast, we're going to be discussing The Curse Episode 7, entitled Self-Exclusion. We'll start with our overall thoughts on the episode and then dive into a spoiler-filled recap of the show. Find more episodes of this podcast at podcast.decodingtv.com. Email us at decodingtv@gmail.com. Find us across all platforms at decodingtv, Instagram, Threads, and so on. All right, Patrick Klepek. Before we get to today's episode, we got to respond to some of the feedback from last week's episode of the show. Or actually, this is from a couple weeks episodes ago. We always love people's emails and theorizing at decodingtv@gmail.com. We got this email from James in Vermont writing into decodingtv@gmail.com saying, quote, "Found your podcast recently. I've listened to Dave many times over the years and followed Patrick's work since the One Up days."
Ooh.
By the way, same, James.
Oh, no. And probably saw me on a table pretending to be a wolf at one time in the One Up show. I remember that.
Yeah. Good times. Anyway, hadn't noticed this podcast until I saw a tweet about it from Patrick. "I've gone back and enjoyed your curse coverage a lot. Just wanted to mention a detail of the curse episode 5 you all did not mention in your coverage. The potential home buyer who Whitney feared was a white supremacist, but turned out to maybe be a pretty good guy who seemed aligned with her views, was played by Dean Cain, former Superman actor, current right-wing freak.
Oh,
obviously not accidental casting. Noticing that fact added a whole other layer to that scene where you're trying to figure out what this guy's intentions are. I don't think you all mentioned that, so I thought I'd point it out for you. Thanks! Exclamation mark. End quote. Right-wing freak. Those are James' words, not mine, obviously. I have heard tell about Dean Cain's political views.
Oh.
I am going to read to you from Dean Cain's Wikipedia page.
Uh-oh. Okay,
there's a section of Dean Cain's Wikipedia. First of all, did you ever watch, what was it, The Adventures of Superman? Was it Lois and Clark, The Adventures of Superman? Was that what it was called?
No, not personally, but I'm, like, well aware. Like, when he appeared in that scene, I was like, huh, I should look up who that is. And then by the time it was over, that thought had filtered out. But he definitely... he's one of those actors seen before, but I didn't actually watch that show when it was on.
It was a pretty big deal for me, I have to say. I watched it pretty regularly. The show was called Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman. And it aired for many years, has 88 episodes on ABC. And,
wow.
It was, highly enjoyable. I thought I spent a lot of time watching Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman. So basically as a young person, I watched that show and then I'm like, "Ooh, Dean Cain plays Superman." And so I was like, "Oh, what a cool upstanding guy." Here is the political views section from Dean Cain's Wikipedia page. Cain voted for Bill Clinton twice, voted for Al Gore in 2000, the latter of which he said he regretted. He supported John McCain in 2008, supported Rick Perry in the 2012 election, Ooh. And in 2016 and 2020, he endorsed and voted for Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Cain has stated he is very leftist on social issues, citing his support of marijuana legalization and conservative on economic and foreign policy issues. That's the exact quote.
All right.
2018, Cain was elected to the board of directors of the National Rifle Association of America. So... I think, right, what the show is trying to do by having him in there is saying, hey, just because this guy seems like hardcore MAGA online, maybe he's a little more complicated than that. You know, maybe he's maybe you should double click on Dean Cain's views, because it might not be as simple as you think. I think that's what the show's trying to say, you know?
Well, and I saw some commentary around this after you had sent me this letter originally, and I was like, well, then why would he agree to be on the show? And, well, one, I don't think it's necessarily poking fun at his views. I doubt the show, I mean, I guess the show is to a certain extent, but... in some ways, it's like validation for his own viewpoint of himself, right? Like
right,
the character,
yes.
However you feel about Dean Cain, and I think we could, you know, make some pretty safe assumptions there. Like the show, as presenting that character, feels as though that is the way Dean Cain views himself and the world, even if many people might disagree with that characterization. It definitely feels in line with how Dean talks about himself.
Right, right. According to this Wikipedia page,
yeah.
You know, but yes, I think that's right. I think that's right. So, people are complicated. You know, that's one of the many messages of the curse. So, okay. Before we move on, we did also get this comment on last week's episode, and I just wanted to read it because it was it's just a little fun little comment from David Potts over at decodingtv.com. Who wrote in a comment that you know on the site saying total delight of an episode 5, it's a good day, most fun I've had watching a new TV show since Succession. Funny story, I'm currently sitting in a bar middle of Saturday afternoon at a nice Mexican restaurant that opened near my home of Austin, Texas. I'm the only customer in the entire restaurant. To my surprise, one of the staff approached me with a DSLR camera asking to take pictures of me enjoying my chips, salsa, and Diet Coke while waiting for my order. What can I say? I guess I'm the type they're looking for. So funny to experience this after watching episode 5. End quote. Anyway, I just was wondering, Patrick Klepek, you know, you have lived a rich and interesting life, and I'm curious if your image has been appropriated for marketing. I will tell you that recently this happened to me, where we recently had some very minor work done on our garage in our house.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who did the work, they asked my wife, hey, can we film you doing a little testimonial about the garage? And she's like, okay, yeah, sure. Why not? I mean, she thought it was going to be for their, like, maybe they would quote it on their website or something, you know, but like, she thought it'd be like, not a big deal. So she's not like, she's not like dressed up or anything. She hasn't done her hair and makeup. Right. So she's like, yeah, sure, I'll do it. And so they ask her some questions about the garage. What these guys do is they take that testimonial footage and they pay to make it into an Instagram stories ad.
Oh,
so
no.
Then all of a sudden, like, all these people that we know are getting served this ad of my wife talking about our garage and how awesome the garage, you know, and like, meanwhile, I'm like dying inside because this thing is shot with what's like probably like an iPhone 11, you know, like there's no good video and audio. Like, Patrick, I think you appreciate that I take my audio and video quality very seriously.
You do.
And we got Patrick a new light so that he looks good on videos and stuff.
The funniest the funniest version of this story is this accidental filming also having extremely crummy AV. Like, if I was drawing it up myself, like, that's that, like, you have to have that present.
Yeah, I mean, they're filming it. I was like, whatever. It's no one's going to see this. Meanwhile, they probably spent like, you know, hundreds of dollars to show it to people that we know locally. They're like, hey, I saw you on Instagram in an ad. And, you know,
that's
people
amazing.
Talking to my wife about it. So anyway,
when there was a big Xbox event at E3, the event that you might have seen died this week in the video game industry. If you aren't familiar with video games, it's a huge trade show. It's where in the past, like, all the big video games were announced every year coming out for the next couple of years. And when we lived in, my wife never attended it except for the like 2-ish years that we lived in Los Angeles. And then she wouldn't go to the show, but it's like when I get invited to parties or events, like, it was pretty easy for me to get a plus one. And occasionally there'd be people she wants to meet, or the event itself was interesting enough that she'd come along. And when Microsoft announced the Kinect, their sort of like camera, like motion detection device that is going to be like part of the future of video games. And It wasn't. But they had this enormously expensive premiere event for it where they hired Cirque du Soleil to do a custom show. And it was meant to demonstrate the movement, whatever. Like, I was like, you know, Katie, like, this seems like a they'll probably be drinks and you get to watch a free Cirque du Soleil show that they made for this. She's like, great, I'll come. So we go and it's a lot of fun. It's really neat. Seems very expensive. And then as we're leaving, she's standing right next to me. And then I look over and she's no longer standing next to me. They were peeling people off from who were leaving to film them for like testimonials about the event for Xbox Live. And so if you're familiar with Microsoft in particular, there's a guy named Major Nelson, who is like one of their main spokespeople. He recently retired from Microsoft and is I think, just doing consulting now. And I look over and this Major Nelson is like taking my wife away from me and is like asking her what her gamer tag is. She had one at the time because she played a little Left 4 Dead, but it wasn't really sure what he was asking. It was just fumbling her way through a bunch of video game questions. And then it all showed up. So like eventually we found it. We found the clip that like, you know, 6 seconds on Xbox Live of like, well, we got to get a couple of women in here. Like, oh, look, there's one. Like, film her. Like, film her. And she was like, should I be? What's going to happen with that? I was like, don't worry about it. Like, it's just.
Wow, this is a serious violation of your journalistic integrity, Patrick, that your wife was seen promoting one of the major console makers.
One of many violations.
Gonna have to report this to the bosses at crossplay.news.
Yeah, let them know.
They're not going to be very happy about this.
Ethics have been violated. We'll make sure and let the employees know. We'll hand out some paperwork. I mean, I literally just got a thing in my email. This is my first year setting up like my own company to run my finances, and they were like, "Hey," because I am an employee of my company.
Yes,
it's tax stuff anyway. But they're like, "Hey, in your state, you have to hand out sexual harassment guidelines to your employees. Like, reply yes if you want to know how to do this." And I was like, "So I need to hand out, or at least say that I handed out sexual harassment guidelines to the employee, the company, me, from the boss of the company." Me.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, I'll do it. Whatever I got to do, state of Illinois.
Yep. Be careful. You do not sexually harass yourself, Patrick.
I'm working on it.
All right. Let's. Anyway, those are some comments and emails. We always appreciate it. Keep them flowing into decodingtv.com. Thanks to all of our paid members for making this podcast possible, or decodingtv@gmail.com. Patrick, let's talk about episode 7 of The Curse. Self-exclusion. Let's start with our overall thoughts. We'll get to a spoiler-filled recap. What did you think of this episode?
Breaking Asher appears to be where we're headed with this show. It's a good episode, but the, you know, I think we were, I mentioned on our previous discussion that sort of the tone of the cringe of the show seems to be shifting to a certain sense. Like, it's getting to more upsetting rather than humorous, and it's not that there isn't humor to be found in the show, but like the uncomfortable is like getting distressing and like giving me a lot of anxiety, and this episode is just completely full of it. Like, we're getting plot lines that we wondered what happened to those are finally like paying off in like really satisfying ways. We have increasingly clear kind of calling them heroes and villains isn't like, it doesn't work as cleanly on a show like this in which people are really complicated, but we're getting characters have come into focus. You know, we were talking in previous about characters making decisions that you won't be able to walk back. And I think what I find really interesting about this episode is it feels like it's the show applying a Sharpen filter to everybody. And just like every character is becoming a little sharper, a little more interesting as a result. Even if, like, for the most part, we aren't really seeing, like, the full consequences of those actions. And it's more just the show. I feel like it's if it was a gun, it's just putting another bullet in the chamber. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, well, there's another one. There's another one. And they're all going to fire at some point. And we're just watching this tension just get ratcheted to such an uncomfortable degree. But it does make me very, I guess excited, but we were wondering, where is this show going? And I do think at this point, even if I couldn't tell you like narratively where it all ends up, emotionally, it does seem like we're headed in a direction that is very interesting for, frankly, more characters than I expected, right? You know, mm-hmm. there's a lot more Kara in this episode. Dougie's a little off to the side, but just in general, it feels like the show, it's not just going to be vibes. I feel like the show is heading to a place. I feel like this show is going to have something to say. I don't know what it is, but I have my suspicions, and I frankly just can't, like, it's everything in my power is to not just hit play on the next one, because I don't want to shotgun this show, and I want to like really sit with it week to week as you and I go through it, as we're watching it with the audience. But I thought it was fantastic, and I'm frankly just completely dreading where this is all going to end up, because none of it's good. Like, no, I don't think any character comes out of this like without a bunch of scars.
There's seemingly no good people on the show, quote unquote good people, right? There's no one you can really root for on the show. But I agree that this was a very good episode. I think, again, Emma Stone is incredible in this episode. There's two scenes that Emma Stone has that are just so amazing. I'm mildly upset more people aren't watching it, because I just think like what she's doing is so difficult, and she's pulling it off every single week, and it's really amazing. I think you can tell a lot about where the show's heading by the episode lengths, Patrick. Like, this episode and the last two episodes haven't been very long, mm-hmm. and the final three episodes are all like 58, 60 minutes. I think the finale is like 70 minutes long.
Oh, interesting.
So I think I think at this point, I feel like all the table setting has occurred.
Yeah.
And we are now going to enter the end game of the show in, you know, a rollicking good state. So I think this is a very solid episode. I liked it quite a lot. And again, Emma Stone, just MVP of the show for me. So
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So anyway, those are some overall thoughts on the episode. This is episode 7 of The Curse, Self-Exclusion.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Now, Patrick Klepek, before we talk about an in-depth recap, there is one thing I want to mention. You know, I was going to wait to mention this until we got to it, but I want to put it up top because I think it might shape some of our conversation.
Sure.
The whole season, we have been wondering what is up with the way that this show is filmed. As we've discussed, the show is filmed with very long camera lenses, often through objects. So there's a scene that happens with like Whitney and Kara this episode that is shot through the window of Kara's house. And you can see like there's specks of dirt and all this stuff block, you know, obscuring the camera. And it's shot as though it is a reality show or some kind of surveillance, right? Like, that these people don't know that they're being filmed, and you know, the people filming this are just barely grabbing the shots. A lot of long, continuous takes, right? Which is what you would expect to see with a reality show. There was one shot this episode that really made me think about what is going on. Do you know what shot it was? There was one shot that I was like, "Huh, that's interesting." Do you know what shot I'm talking about?
No, not off the top of my head.
Okay, so virtually every single shot in the show is a stationary shot, like on a locked, we call it locked off, or on a tripod, basically. Mm-hmm. Now, the tripod might move back and forth, like it might like pan back and forth. But it often seems like it's on a tripod far away from the actors, and we're just barely catching them across the street or through a window or whatever. When we're in the car, there are stationary shots, like in the car, like, you know, kind of hidden camera style footage, like in the car. It's like, you know, a camera right in front of them, between them, you know, like looking at one of them and so on, or through the car window. Whitney gets in a car with her father this episode, mm-hmm. and drives, and the camera angle on that shot is ridiculous. It's basically she is being filmed as from another car that is like barely keeping up with her. That's like drifting back and forth and like not keeping up with her. And I was like, what a weird shot. And it occurred to me that with all the other shots, like when you were in Whitney and Ash's car, the shots are like very prepared. But when you're in, when Whitney gets in a different car that you don't prepare for, you need to have an alternate plan, which in this case was like, let's put a camera in a car and follow them barely, which is what happens. Couple that with the fact that we learn at the end of this episode that Asher has been secretly surveilling his own conversations with Whitney. And I do wonder if there is still yet a domino to fall when it comes to this whole camera angle thing. Do you know, like,
well, yeah, that we had someone write in a previous episode theorizing that one of the like late game reveals of this might be that, you know, they have been surveilled in a way to allow a different type of show to have been filmed all along that is tracking with everything else they're up to, going all the way back to Dougie wanting to overhear Asher having the conversation with the reporter. That's like the first inklings we get of like, what if a different style, like a different story was happening all along for a different show? And I think it's still on the table. And yet I also think it's incredibly possible that it's just part of the really experimental aesthetic of the show.
100%. 100%. And that's, to be fair, I was very much in the latter camp until this episode. I was very much like, oh yeah, it's just, they're trying to make it seem like a reality show. You know, they're trying to make it seem like a reality show. That's it. That's kind of what I felt. But for some reason, seeing the shot of Whitney and her dad in the car, like, changed it all for me, because I'm like, oh, this really feels like there's somebody in a car next to them with a camera. Like, it's shot through a car window, right?
Right.
And so I'm like, so they're, like, because in the past, there's been times when it's like, oh, well, how did they get a camera there? Like, that doesn't make any sense. It's just part of the aesthetic of the show. But then there is this car shot, and it's completely, like, changed my whole perspective. The other thing is, it's possible that Asher is surveilling them, and it's not for some kind of show. It's just he's doing it for his own purposes. We find out at the end that Asher is the one behind it, and he's doing it just to improve his relationship with Whitney. You know, like,
I know, it's like one of the saddest possible things. I mean, there is the, you know, there's still the kind of unexplained moment where from a couple episodes back when they're filming one of the new episodes, and Dougie has Asher's phone, and he's very mm-hmm. weird about it. Like, he's installed apps. Like,
right.
He claims like I just downloaded like a, you know, a dating app, like going to get you some ladies. And if you want evidence for like a broader sort of like, well, he'd probably be downloading some sort of software so that he could be more like he could be surveilling the two of them in a way that maybe it doesn't line up one to one with like, how are you getting, like, I don't know what we're going to get at the end of the show is that all of these personal intimate scenes with the two of them, like Ash and Whitney, have been filmed, but that where other parts of it have been recorded. And like, I don't know, like maybe it's revealed like these are like kind of reenactments or something that like allows like a story to be told. And like,
yeah,
I can still see some version of that. It feels like maybe that's like overly complicated for the show that's in front of us.
Yeah, the show is very like relatively simplistic in its setup so far. It's like these two people are trying to make a reality show, and it's very linear so far, right? So there's no like flashbacks, as far as I can recall, right? So
it doesn't, and it's not a, like a twist show. Like it doesn't seem like that kind of thing. Where it's like, you've just been looking back. Like all of these shots make sense now, but it, because of the nature of the show, everything's on the table. I don't. Yeah. It's I wouldn't put money on this, or not a ton, but I don't think it would be out of bounds. I just think it's. I think it's unlikely, but I don't think it's out of bounds.
I am probably overthinking it. I'm 99% chance I'm overthinking it, but it just, but it, I was just so thrown off by that one shot, because previously I was just like, oh, they're just, yes, they're loosely using the reality show aesthetic. But then I saw that shot. I'm like, oh, they're taking it literally in that there's literally a camera and another car following them. That's not happening when it's their car, where they actually have cameras they could put in there and prepare for.
Right.
So I'm like, what? And it, anyway, again, it set me on this huge tailspin, and we don't need to go into more into it.
I think in many ways, what we may end up looking back at is it's a fun consequence of a show where it doesn't have a central thread for you to kind of grasp onto. It's got a lot of different things going on. Its storytelling is not it's not normal in that way. It's kind of doing its own thing, and then because of the aesthetic, like you almost find yourself grasping onto different things to explain what's going on, and the end of it might be more normal than, you know, you expect. But I think that's part of the fun of the way the show is structured and shot, is it, and also because of the unreliable characters, like it lends itself to, well, why not be that? I don't think you're out of bounds to at least theorize it. I think it's a fun theory.
All right, Patrick Klepek, let's get into the episode. We're going to spoil episode 7 of The Curse. Let's talk about the Nala stuff real quick. There's Nala scenes bookend the episode. We open on Nala, who cursed Asher. She's in gym class. She's fixated on another girl climbing a rope and quietly wishes for her to fall. Now, that girl is a girl that was teasing her, we've seen in previous episodes, right? So anyway, the girl does not fall, and when Nala tries to climb the rope herself, she falls. The girls try to encourage Nala. Nala isn't interested. Nala is not interested in reconciling with this girl. And so Nala tells the gym teacher she's being bullied, but the gym teacher is not super receptive or responsive to that information. In the final scene, we see Nala chatting with a girl on the playground. In the background, the girl she was feuding with runs into a wall and injures her head while Nala looks on. Does Nala actually have cursed powers? TBD. But I will say this, Patrick Klepek. As far as we know, Barkhad Abdi, Nala's father, isn't dead. So that's great. Because we really left him in a terrible place not too long ago.
Yeah, I took some comfort in the fact that she does not seem traumatized. So I don't know if that means the chiropractic session went well necessarily, but at least means he wasn't a corpse at the end, which was at least a coin flip away from me at the conclusion of that scene. I presume we're going to hear from. I mean, like, it would be very easy for the show to have left these characters behind too, and so it makes me like very interested to see, like, why does the show keep why do we keep get reminded of Nala? And again, maybe it's just there's been a constant reframing, a constant reminder of, well, what is a curse if nothing more than something you believe in? It doesn't, you know, it doesn't have to be supernatural. You can just believe it to be true and then find ways for that to manifest, whether they're actually true or not. And maybe that is part of what's happening here, or maybe that's, you know, part of a broader consequence for Whitney and Asher that we've yet to see the shoe drop on.
Yeah. Yeah. I like how the show dances with the supernatural. I'll put that out there. I don't know that it's really a supernatural show, but I like that it kind of plays with that idea. I did rewatch that scene of that girl getting injured at the end multiple times to see what was happening, because it would have been interesting if she actually fell off something, but she doesn't fall. She like runs into a wall, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, she seems to be just like playing like a game of tag or something like that, and just like hits kind of a brick wall. It looks so like
it's
it
probably
hurt.
Just it's probably just like a it coincidence. It's probably just a coincidence. So anyway, all right. So there's some stuff with Whitney and Kara in this episode. Let's talk about what happens there. Whitney travels to a mini golf course with the racist statue that Kara texted Dougie about last episode. She offers to buy the statue, and the business owner lets her take it. She seems extremely satisfied with herself and decides to drag the statue to Kara's house. Let me pause here for a moment, Patrick Klepek. I really appreciated how this episode showed people being frustrated in workplaces. So in the scene where she buys the mini golf, like the guy agrees, like, okay, I'm selling it to you. And then he calls out his coworker's name and has to shout it four times before he's screaming and swearing. Later on in the episode, when Whitney goes to get money from the bank, there's a bank teller,
yeah,
who says, like, hey, do you want me to count out the money for you? And he's like, no, that's okay. And then, you know, Whitney's dad leaves, and then the bank teller says, hey, can you put some more paper into the receipt machine? And then he's like, oh, no, I need to do it myself. Okay, thanks. I'm just like, wow, they're really just offering us nice slice of life in the show. It's just like they don't have to do that. Like they don't have to spice up those moments a little bit, but they kind of
it's just
do it
texture. But like it's really good texture, yeah. I think. And part of what I also love about this little section is I think it speaks to your point about Emma Stone and the work that she's doing in the show. She's a different character. Like she is a different, like the moment. And we talked about that moment where she decides mm-hmm. with Dougie, like Green Queen, right? And it feels like this yeah. is a moment for her on which a lot is going to unravel out of. And there is sort of a confidence, a sort of like, like that she, like a zip in her step that she has through a lot of this episode. There are moments where the facade, you know, breaks and we'll get into it, especially with Kara. But I don't know. There is something about like she feels like she sees herself and what's in front of her and what she wants clearer than she has ever seen before, in a way that is very subtle with the way Stone chooses to act it, but is very noticeable, especially in this episode.
Here's my question for you, Patrick Klepek. How much money do you think she offered to pay for a racist Native American statue?
Well,
because we don't see it. She writes a check.
But we see an eyeball. I mean, like, the guy looks at it and pauses for a moment. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing thousands, right? And it's the kind of money that's like, you just don't, like, question
you can't
it.
Turn it down.
You just go, okay, what did you want? And then you proceed. I'm assuming thousands of dollars.
I think minimum 10K.
10K? Wow. Okay,
because if you're that guy, okay, uh-huh. you're clearly okay with having a racist statue.
Probably,
on your
probably place. Never even thought about it. Like, right, I'm not, right, like, right. I don't think it's occurred to him that there's a racist. Like, it's not like he walks into work every day. Ah, time to open up the mini golf with the racist statue. I think it's just right. it's there. It's always right. been
so.
There.
It's going to be a big inconvenience for you to get rid of the racist statue, and so. You would want enough money for someone to not only be paying for the racist statue, but also for the inconvenience of it. I think she's paying 10K. Like that, 10K is an amount for that statue where, yeah, you really would be stupid if you did not take that. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? Like, but for like 1,000 or 2,000, it's like, well, hey, I don't want the disruption of needing to like deploy people to like get rid of this. Plus, I kind of like it. I kind of like this racist statue. There is if you're the guy. I'm speaking in the voice of the guy.
Part of the charm of the place.
Right, exactly. No, I don't endorse any of this. I'm just trying to put myself in the mind of a person who runs a mini golf course that has a racist statue on it. So
yes. And also, I mean, we for all the anxiety that Whitney has about Asher obsessing over money, she got no trouble spending any money at all in this episode. And so I even if my guess that the money is probably lower than yours, I would err on your take on it just because of the way the rest of the episode plays out. Like she's just in a situation. She's like, it's a very fuck it attitude that she has. And if she wants it, she's going to go get it. And she's going to get it however she needs to get it. And my guess is she offered, like you said, enough money to just close the deal. She doesn't want to negotiate.
Right, right.
Just
right.
give me the thing, and like let's maybe, all move on.
You know,
with our
maybe
lives.
10K, maybe like 5K. You know, I could see it being 5K.
Like, because I'm trying to think how much for a guy like that is going to make him go like a cartoonish, like are you if like yeah. like if it was a cartoon, his eyeballs are going like whoa 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 whoa. Like that's the vibe you get from yeah. from him looking at that. So, but 5K, 10K, it's an enormous amount of money that. you know, that's probably how much the place brings in, you know, in a couple of days, like in a spot like that. Right. So
there's also a nice moment when she's driving it out of the car, the parking lot, and it like flies to the side of the road. And it's kind of, it's a good metaphor for how all of her plans, sometimes with good intentions, go badly. Anyway,
I'm not sure this one is one of those, though. I don't think this is a good intentions. This is calculated.
She is 100% in complete manipulator mode. This, everything she does with Kara is an attempt to manipulate her into A, being a consultant, B, signing off her art to use in the show. And she's doing it with money mostly, right? Buying the statue and at the end, finally just giving her cold hard cash, right? So anyway, she pranks Kara by putting the statue in front of the door, ringing the doorbell, making her think someone else left it, and says the statue is a gift. There's this tense moment when she says, you know, you can use it for your art. And Kara says, I could sign it right now and you could buy it for me, which is like...
That was woo.
Yeah. Not great. And then Whitney, this is actually ingenious, where Whitney somehow says, like, you know, I would love to have some of your art, but we all know how slow you are at signing releases, you know, something like that. She manages to take it and like jujitsu it into a thing that illustrates why she was there. And I thought that was very ingenious.
And manages, I think there, you know, Kara, I think, was attempting to insult her to a degree.
Absolutely.
And I think a version from Whitney two episodes ago is very hurt by that comment, and it becomes a revealing moment about the fact that they aren't actually friends. Like Kara's just being nice to someone who pays them large sums of money for art that makes them feel good about themselves.
Yes.
And here Whitney's not, she's not here to be a friend. Like, it doesn't matter what she views this relationship as. You're right. She just sort of just parries it away and uses that to accomplish, or at least get closer to, what she's ultimately trying to accomplish with being there and what's good for the show, or rather what's good for her, which is what this has turned into.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Whitney is just very calculating this episode. So she tries to get Kara to sign the release. Kara refuses because of Whitney's parents and what they do and how they take advantage of poor people. And so Whitney tries to explain how she's trying to do the opposite of her parents. And she's been hiding something from Kara too. She's no longer happy in her marriage because Asher is focused entirely on money. And Whitney says the real reason she was coming over was to ask Kara to be a consultant on the show, a request Kara is, again, apprehensive about and wonders if it's possible to be an anonymous consultant on the show. Again, this is one of those two scenes I was referring to where I thought Emma Stone was amazing, because if you think about the layers of what's going on, she is portraying somebody who is pretending to be open about her bad marriage in an effort to manipulate this person into signing this thing and taking this money, right? So she's pretending to be somebody who's pretending. And that's just difficult to do. Like, it's difficult enough to pretend to be someone, like to act and embody someone, but then to embody someone who's like being fake. And then for the audience to be able to read that, you know, is, I think, just tremendous, tremendous performance. So,
well, and on some level, I think part of what the show is picking at is, was it like profoundly uncomfortable to watch Asher and Whitney recreate this like funny moment in their lives for Instagram? I think part of what the show is getting is like, yeah, that's like manifestly funny to watch people try and recreate this natural moment between themselves, but we put on facades and manipulation of ourselves, our intentions, who we are, what we want all the time. And to say that is purely just for viral clicks or to get, you know, attention, like, you know, attention, sort of like the attention economy, it betrays the hard work we do being manipulative in our real lives using the same tool sets, but for different means. And I think that's part of what makes the show so smart and interesting, is the way that it's running between those two worlds, even though I think they end up having more in common with one another than at first glance.
Right. Like it asks you, what are the performances that you do, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, the episode concludes with Whitney asking her father for money. The cleanest way is to just get cash from the bank. Whitney informs her father it's a loan and it's the last time. She ends up using the money to pay Kara for being a consultant, and the process is able to convince Kara to sign off on her art being used for the show. And then they head out for an impromptu game of horse, a scene that shows the two of them being actual friends for seemingly the first time. I don't know if I'd agree with that part about them being friends, but I think they genuinely seem to be having a nice moment of connection, is what I would say. Yeah. A lot of interesting stuff here. I love the dialogue. You know, all the dialogue on the show is very naturalistic, but all the like snarky comments that Whitney's dad makes about how, like, you know, she's like, you know, he said, first of all, he gets $40,000 because he's like, this way you don't need to bother me next time. And then she says, okay, well, it's the last time. And he's like, okay, yeah, sure. And she's like, no, I'm serious. Add it to the tab, because there's probably like a long running tab. And he's like, okay, do you want the market interest rate or the friends and family interest rate, right?
And, well, he sees her, right? Like, he sees her more truthfully than she sees herself, or whatever version of herself that she has convinced herself she has become, whether it's to distance herself from her parents or what you know, what have you. But, you know, so much of this show is to portray the parents as villains, and they very much, there's a lot of ancillary evidence that they are. We aren't actually seeing that. It's not like we're spending scenes seeing how they are exploitative in the community. But as parents, I mean, they see their daughter for who she is much more than the way that she portrays herself. And I think that's it's a fascinating dynamic that we probably have not seen the last of. Because is it really the last time? Like, I don't know. Not at the pace that she's spending money.
Yeah, agreed. And I think that one of the theses of the show is that there's something about being liberal or progressive that perhaps inherently requires some massive amount of self-deception.
Yeah.
That you're always convincing yourself there's a different, better version of yourself that doesn't actually exist, and this scene is kind of a symptom of that. So,
or anyway. the work to like improve the system, change the system, whether that's like yourself or the systems you claim to care about, require actual work and over and over in the show, going back and sacrifice.
You know, in a way that like,
and that's not something that. Whitney especially is shown to be capable of actually doing. I mean, her sacrifice is look what I'm doing for the community, while they're also secretly buying up lots of land to flip alongside. I mean, you know, so anyway.
Yeah. Totally. Also, there was some there is an amazing little detail with Kara in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Where she has a roommate. So Whitney comes over. She's like, hey, I'm giving you $20,000. And Kara's like, great. And I just have to say, like, I know artists, you know, like, it's hard to make a living as an artist. Like, it's not easy. The fact that Kara has a roommate is, you know, very common, because artists often can't live by themselves. And she also accepts $20,000 from the person she probably doesn't agree very much with, because it's like, hey, like $20,000 tax-free, that's like a lot of money in her situation. She could use it to make some interesting stuff. And then she has a roommate that comes in and says, and then Kara says to say, excuse me, I'm using the living room. Like, that's the phrasing. She goes over, she puts the money in the freezer, which has a lock on it.
Yes.
That's just like, what? How does that even work logistically? Like, I assume you're locking it from the roommate. And so it's like, does the roommate just not have access to that? Like, what's... Anyway, I don't know how that would work.
It's a... I wouldn't have expected this much of this character in the show. I'm pleasantly surprised that, like, I thought there was a good chance that we were going to be done with her after the sort of art installation. But the fact that she's returned and now become, I feel like dark things await her for signing those contracts. Like, I feel like taking that money, like becoming part of this inner circle, is going to have some pretty gnarly consequences for her as a result.
Yeah.
We may look back on, there's something very specific about the music choice they make when they're playing Horse, which is like, it's very kind of upbeat and like fun. And
yeah,
you know,
I got the song. I got the song. I believe it's called Calm the F Down by Dogzam. I think that's the name of the song that plays at the end of the episode.
Gotcha. And you know, it's there's so many layers in that scene. You know, I wrote in the write-up, I was like, you know, that seemingly acting like friends for the first time, but I think, and the music layered on top of that is like these different layers of facade in which this, you know, out of context, maybe you look at this and go like, oh, this is like footage of like two people
right.
like sharing a moment. But like with all the context we have in it, we know how fake, like how much is behind all this. There's money, there's lies, there's deception. And then to put the kind of fun, fritzy music on top of it, I think, you know, speaks to the many ways this show is speaking to manipulation. And it's
absolutely.
Like what we do in our personal lives, and it's what happens in an editing room. And it's not just in a reality show, it's what they can do on this show as well. Where like just by putting on some music, it can kind of make you feel like, oh, maybe they're having a moment. But like you step back for 30 seconds and go like, yeah, but what's the moment? Like she just accepted $20,000 and put it in a freezer with a locker. What the fuck's going on here?
Right. Yeah. Agreed. All right. Well, that's what happens with Whitney and Kara. Let's talk about what happens with Whitney and Asher this episode.
Oh, do we have to?
We join Asher at the corporate comedy retreat. They're discussing self-deprecating humor. Asher's asked to try a joke. And I mean, this whole sequence, I don't know, man. This was like, this is like funny from like a classic Nathan Fielder. Like everyone's being really uncomfortable. I mean, all the actors are really naturalistic. It really feels like they just went into the community and found these people, especially like the gym teacher from the episode. He seems like an actual just random guy. Doesn't seem like a well-known actor or anything like that.
Could have been a deleted scene is what I'd say about this sequence. Maybe it's got a little more to it later.
Right,
but
it contributes seemingly nothing to the main plot. It's just more making fun of Asher for having a small penis. That's kind of what it is.
Yes.
And
I mean, it's a fine scene.
It's funny. It's, you know, it's funny, but it's like, it's uncomfortable. And I like that there's a woman that's, you know, trying to say like, hey, I really think we should move on. And then the teacher like can't move on. Patrick, we've been in situations where we've been on a podcast and maybe we just can't move on from a topic. Mm-hmm, right. Mm-hmm, and it's like, it's a kind of a painful situation where you realize, oh, I've been on a podcast talking about this topic for 35 minutes. And at some point I need to move on, but I can't, like I lack the ability to, you know, and you kind of watch this teacher get stuck in that loop. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of interesting, you know, I guess, but.
Well, and I do wonder, you know, we've also talked about the mode that the show is in at this point, that does the show feel like we need to give the audience like a moment to breathe to some degree. Mm-hmm. And there's just not that many opportunities for the show to have it at this point, you know? And so I sort of get it from that perspective, but it's kind of like, I guess I'm just over the small penis joke. You know what I mean? Like,
it's not as sophisticated as like everything else the show seems to be doing. That's the thing.
No. So. And like, I understand what they're picking at, which is how Asher views himself and the lack of confidence he has. I mean, this loops all the way around to why would someone secretly record fights with their significant other, you know, and then take notes about it for self-improvement. Like it's all tied together in how Asher views himself. I'm over the small dick as like the method to like reiterate that point. I feel like there are other ways. Look, Asher has other problems as a person that we could get at that and still have that moment. And I just, the show is just fixated on that to a degree that I'm hoping it's the last of it, but I feel like maybe we're due for one last dick shot. Like they made the prosthetic, you know what I mean? Like,
They got to use it. They got to use it. So anyway, so by the end, the teacher asks Asher not to return to the comedy class.
Even though Asher had a point there, Like,
he didn't. Asher didn't do anything wrong. He didn't. He didn't want the teacher to bring that topic up.
He's,
you know,
Asher's no good at this. And like the teacher should just recognize you're bad. Don't call on him. And just let's all get through the class. Like, we've all been in situations like that where you recognize something isn't working for someone, and you just do the best that you can. And instead, he drags Asher through the mud. Now Asher, like Asher does, makes it 1,000 times worse. The way he sort of chuckles to himself when he thinks he's telling like sort of a funny joke about his like it's just
I'll tell you what I wish I could stretch.
Oh my god,
no one's ever said I think there is there a banana in your pocket. Okay, anyway,
Jesus Christ.
Asher returns home. Whitney shuffles out of the room, and Asher discovers the local news story is running about the casino scandal. And it's on DVR, so Asher rewinds it and then watches the whole thing. It turns out Asher delivered security footage to the reporter that showed state officials letting people with known gambling addictions continue to play. And the footage reveals Asher is laughing at one of those people. By the way, like, it's actually even worse. Basically, I watched this a few times. It's like very, it's a little bit, it's actually surprisingly complicated. That there's apparently a law in the universe of the show, maybe in real life, where if you are addicted to gambling, you can ask the casino, please don't let me into the casino. Mm-hmm. And they are required to not let you in. Well, they let this woman in. And essentially part of it is you cannot win any money at the casino. So this woman goes in.
Or you have to give it back. If for some reason you manage to make it through their security or their like AI detection that they allude to, that you have to give back that. And the idea is that then you also won't lose any money either. Like, you're just not allowed to win or lose at the casino.
So then the tape is this woman, the local news is reporting on this woman who goes in and wins $38,000, but she was on the list, and so therefore she couldn't get the money, and they had to take it back. And it shows an unnamed casino employee laughing at her from behind. That is Asher. First of all, I'm just amazed that it took this long to pay this plotline off. This was introduced in episode 1. And now we are in episode 7, finally getting to a resolution on this. But anyway, the footage reveals Asher's laughing at one of these people, and Asher tries to talk with Whitney, but she says that Asher, A, is a bad person and only does the right thing because of her. Like, we get a sense that he wouldn't have left the casino if she hadn't told him to, you know? And so it's a painful conversation. Later, Whitney shows up to record some shots with Dougie, who asks her how her relationship with Asher's going. And she explains that it's not going super well. And when asked if their relationship is going to survive this troubling period, she declines to answer. This was the second scene that I thought was amazing, where Dougie basically asked the equivalent of, you know, you guys are strong, you're going to survive. And she says, next question. And she kind of, the look that she has of uncertainty and doubt on her face and pain, I just found very profound. You know, I thought it was really powerful. So,
do you think she was playing a character there? Like, it felt like I thought there was a moment when Dougie asked that first question where Whitney herself is like flipping a switch. I'm going into, like, for lack of a better phrase, like Green Queen mode. I have identified who I want to be, the story that's going to be told here, and who I'm going to bury along the way. And there's like truth there. Obviously, we get enough evidence from out of the cameras from Asher and Whitney's relationship that there's a lot going on there, a lot that's unsaid, a lot of really like strange power dynamics that we don't have a full grasp of. And so to describe the relationship as like on a strong foundation, like that's probably untrue. But you know, there are moments like when they confront each other about the casino. In that moment, it does feel like we're getting a very honest version of Whitney. I don't feel like she's in a purposely manipulative mode. I think she is disappointed in Asher and is actually upset about what she's seen. And it's not part of a grand scheme that she's like plotting. The moment she goes in front of that camera, though, I get the sense that that is a different version. Like, that's the peppy version of Whitney that's going to pay 10 grand for the racist statue. Like, this is part of a web she's weaving and chooses in that moment to weave it.
It's possible, Patrick, but she's also extremely disdainful of Asher in the next scene when they confront each other outside of the shooting. Now, that could also be part of it. Maybe she's like Daniel Day-Lewis-ing this thing and just being in character as a very unhappy wife for the whole time for the purpose of the show. I wouldn't put that past her. But I don't know. It could be real. I think, you know, I'm 50-50 on it. I'm 50-50 on it. So anyway, a little scene with Asher trying to get filmed for an interview. It doesn't work out. And Dougie kind of gives him a hard time about not inviting him to Shabbat dinner. And then that's basically the end of the episode when it comes to like significant plot developments. So any other thoughts about the episode or what might be to come?
I thought the Dougie part was pretty fucking weird.
Yeah, weird. Because they basically get informed, hey, you don't have any more time to shoot today. Like, you've gone over time.
It's you know, if you've been on a film production, right? Like, it's a lot of union workers and there's their time and, like, yeah, they're totally reason. Like, I'm on the side of the production workers who are like, screw you. Like, we want to go home. Like, sorry that you're filming. Absolutely. Like, but mostly what I meant was, like, Dougie considers himself friends with Asher, and the hostility he deploys in that scene is not in line with the kind of playful shit talking that Dougie has displayed with Asher previously, in which it's not hard for me to imagine Dougie going like, what the hell, man? Like, you know, I'm Jewish. Like, why wouldn't you invite me to these dinners? And then he goes, like, you know, but I'll come over tonight. I'll see you at six, you know, sort of thing. And here, I mean, it feels like Dougie knows what's happening here too. Like, he seems like at this point, he's also signed on to the, he's invested in the let's break Asher sort of thing. And it feels opportunistic to sort of pile on Asher at this point. And that just seems part of this broader plot that they're playing into, both in front of the cameras and off the cameras. I don't know. It just, it struck me as weirdly hostile for a character who is not usually that direct. He's always got a joke after he says something uncomfortable.
I agree. I'm curious what's going on there, but this is the episode where Asher just has a terrible, no good, very bad day. You know, like, he's just consistently
getting a good one though, David. I think we're out of those.
He's out of good days. There's no more good days for Asher after this one. Yeah. So, all right. Final episodes. What's going to happen? I think we're going to see some payoff with Asher and his casino friend.
Yeah.
Like, I think we're going to see what happens there. Like, he's going to get a bad time there. I agree with what you predicted, that Kara is probably going to not be able to get away clean from this issue. Now that she's involved herself, like, this is not in a good place now.
When she signed the contracts, man, it was just like that. It felt like that was the, it's one thing to take the money and just keep manipulating the relationship with Whitney in a way that it seems like Kara has been manipulating for a while now. The moment she was signing a dotted line, it was like, oh, buddy, I don't.
Yep. I think that, you know, I don't know that we're even going to see the release of the show of Fliplanthropy or Green Queen by the end. It seems like they're still in the process of filming it, and we got three episodes left. Maybe the final episode, the show might come out, but it's possible the show will never be completed, right?
Yeah.
The reality show within the show. But yeah, other than that, I don't really know where else we're going. Oh, I mean, some of the predictions people made were Nala's house probably going to turn out to have some terrible things going on, and then it will become like a big scandal.
Well, the mold, right? Them. The mold is being tested. We don't have whether that becomes a main plot thread or not, but it's very easy to imagine the thing Whitney's been running from all along.
Right.
Like,
she's going to become her parents. She's going
to
become her parents.
I mean, yeah, right? There's a very easy way to look at what they view as being something charitable is them just being, can be viewed as being slumlords themselves. Right. Yeah, predatory themselves. And it's not, I can definitely see that being like a major point.
Absolutely,
what happens in the final episodes. And I do know, I remember, you know, critics that reviewed the season have made, not actually said anything, but just be like, wow, can't wait for people to get to the thing. And I'm like, what is, so I've just been obsessed with like, what is the thing? What is the thing? And my guess is there's a reason those final episodes are as long as they are, because I think it's going to have a lot to unpack.
Indeed. Well, we'll be doing it right here on Decoding TV. He is Patrick Klepek. Check out his work at crossplay.news and at Remap Radio, available wherever podcasts can be downloaded. I'm David Chen here on Decoding TV at podcast.decodingtv.com. Email us at decodingtv@gmail.com. Thanks to all of our paid subscribers at decodingtv.com for making this podcast possible. We'll see you next week for another episode of The Curse. And also, we got some coverage of The Crown coming up, hopefully. We got Murder at the End of the World is going to conclude next week. We're going to cover that. And going to try to do some coverage of Fargo, but that's still very much TBD at this point. So that's what's in store. Keep it tuned in right here on Decoding TV. Thanks for listening. We'll see you later.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.